Bihari Gopijana Balabagiri Varadari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vandachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Madhava Giri Varadari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vandachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Shivada Madhava Ki Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is Canto 5, Chapter 8. There it is. Oh, it's prose. Nunam hi ariyaha sadava upashma shilaha kripana suhreda evam vidarte Svartan api gurutaram upekshante nunam hi arya sadava upashama shila kripana suhida evam vidarte svartam api gurutaram upekshante Die. Translation. Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important, to protect one who is surrendered. Prabhupada's purport. Maya is very strong. Yeah? Very strong. In the name of philosophy, altruism, communism. People are feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world. Philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve one's material conditions. Material conditions are already established by superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. Material circumference cannot be increased or decreased. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Ta labhyate dukkha vad anyata sukham. 1518. That's a one. That's Narmuni's instruction to Vyasadeva. Yeah. As far as material happiness is concerned, that comes without effort, just as tribulations come without effort. Material happiness and pain can be obtained without endeavor. Oh, how nice. One should not bother for material activities. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good to others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. In this way, everyone advances spiritually by the grace of the Lord. For our instruction, Bharata Maharaj acted in such a way. We should be careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. One should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. Generally, people do not know this, and they forget it. Consequently, they sacrifice their original interest. The attainment of Vishnu's favor and engage in philanthropic activities for bodily comfort. The previous verse, the king Bharata began to think, alas, this helpless young deer, by the force of time, an agent of the Supreme God, has now lost its relatives and friends, and has taken shelter of me. It does not know anyone but me. I have become his father, mother, brother, relatives. The deer is thinking in this way, and has full faith in me. It does not know anyone but me. Therefore, I should not be envious, and think that for the deer, my own welfare will be destroyed. I should certainly raise, protect, gratify, and fondle it. When it has taken shelter of me, how can I neglect it? Even though the deer is disturbing my spiritual life, I realize that a helpless person who has taken shelter cannot be neglected. That is a great fault. Right. Even though one is in the renounced order of life, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. So is that true? Should sannyasis be heartless? Heartless guys? Yeah? Kill them all, and God sort them out. You think? Yeah? Yeah? Yeah. He's preaching, his idea is correct, that we should give up our renunciation and fondle and caress and feed deer. Yeah. Little dogs. Yeah. 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 So what is a peace formula? How does one attain peace? What three things? That's what we're at. Number 88. What are the three things one needs to obtain peace? Bhagavad Gita says. See if you come from a community of fools here, don't know anything, or wise men. Bhagavad Gita says there are three things. If you have these, you attain peace. Yeah. Yeah. He knows. Yeah. Okay, Hindi? Telugu? Mandarin? Mandarin? Yeah. Good Latin. Yeah. 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 So is Maharaj Bharata thinking it's my deer? I think the first one is to be proprietor. This is mine. And the second one is I will enjoy it. Yeah. And the third one's actually the big problem. You know, this is the first two are kind of obvious. I heard many times probably giving lectures and discussing with people. And the first point you would try to establish a lot of times is are you the controller? You know, are you the controller? No. Are you the controller? No. No. To some degree? Yeah, is Gopi a controller to some degree? Yeah, she has some power, you know. Control people, you know. But that's probably the first point. And people kind of say, well, okay, are you the supreme controller? No. The second point was, is there a controller? And then talk about it, and like, well, the sun's going up, there's colors, light, there's so many things happening. There must be somebody, you know. They all say it's happening by chance. You know, when on the internet, one guy was arguing, you know, that God caused everything to happen. The scientists were saying, well, then you say God did this, God did that. You give no objective information. And the guy answered back, well, you just say chance did this, chance did that. The guy couldn't say much because that's it, isn't it? That's why everything's happening by chance. By chance, there's random permutations. And then the environment, you know, selects, right? The selection by the environment. You know? So somebody, that means the environment has some kind of plan, right? Otherwise, things would just become, you get giraffes with, you know, rhinoceros horns, or, you know, snakes with three legs. You know, the environment must have some kind of, like, thing which is selecting, you know. You know, this just survived, doesn't survive, you know. Really stupid argument. Evolution, the most fundamental level of it is, it's very stupid. Which is better, black moth? Which is better, green moths or gray moths? Which is a higher of an evolutionary scale? You see what I'm trying to trick you into? Yeah, it depends on whether there's soot coming in factories in London or not. Because all these green moths, the birds couldn't see them because the forests were all green, you know. But then all those factories started producing all the soot, and all the first forests turned gray. And all the green moths were stuck out like anything, so the birds ate them. And a few, you know, biological deviants, who had gray children, survived, and they have more children. So off their four, you know, gray moths are the next level on the evolutionary scale, right? Yeah, because it has to be getting better, but then the environment changes again, and green moths are better again. Yeah. So therefore, the environment, you can't say it's getting better, just because it's changing like that, because the environment changes. Yeah? And if you say it's getting better, that means the environment is giving us some kind of, like, you know, impetus to go towards some place like that, selecting like that. So then the environment is God, or what do you want to call it? Yeah? It's a very shallow argument. And then again, you know, in the beginning was the chunk, right? You know, chunk had no enemies, no friends. There was no time and no space, to speak of anything else, you know. But the chunk changed. So it was like, well, why did the chunk change? You know? Is it, you know, no, maybe by chance, by chance, you know, it happened like that. So anyway, I've got this point here. Oh, yeah. I'm the supreme proprietor, you know. And next thing is, I want to enjoy everything. Yeah, we got that. And the third one is the problem, you know, because did he think he was the proprietor of the deer? This is my deer. You think? Kind of, maybe. To enjoy? I will enjoy this deer. I will eat it, cook it. No. And the third thing was, yeah, he was going to enjoy it, but by taking God's position. So the story is usually that Adam and Eve was tempted by the snake. Snake came along and said, hey, you can become like God. You eat this apple. You know, so she did it. And Adam came along and she bewildered him with her feminine potency, and he ate the apple too. You know? But no, that's not the story. That's not what it actually says in Paradise Lost. It says that he realized that he shouldn't do it and he wasn't going to do it. You know, she made a mistake. But then he thought, oh, you know, Suvidam Sarvadehinam. Now poor Eve has to leave. She has to go get a job working at McDonald's, and you know, she has to leave the Garden of Paradise, and has to pay income tax, and has to go have dental bills and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, so she'll be all alone. You know, so I'm going to eat the apple, so I also become contaminated, and I'll go and be with her. Like that. Because I'm everybody's best friend. You know? So it's the same thing. It's not any more advanced knowledge. It's just the same problem. You know? But here's, like, you know, giving us a big example of how it happens and how you can think this way, and, you know, you know, if I don't take care of this deer, who will take care of it? You know any stories about people who solve this problem correctly? Yeah. It came up in the Sunday feast in San Jose when a very intelligent guy I was talking about. You know, poor guys in India and Prabhupada, Murti there. He said, well, you should have taken that money you used to make the Murti of Prabhupada in the temple, and you should have fed poor people. That's more compassion. Exactly that same point. You know? But well, one thing, the first point is that nothing is separated from Krishna. You know, so there's nothing separated from Krishna. So everything has is harmonious and it functions. So, freedom from hunger, freedom from anxiety, freedom from defamation, freedom from boredom. You know, these all have their, you know, their function. You know, like that. And hunger also has its function. Defamation, like that. And so, when we put a flower garland on our body, you don't have to put a flower garland on your shadow. Hatsugu's example. It's really nice. It's automatic. So if your spiritual life is properly engaged, your material life will follow automatically. You know? We eat prasadam, right? We can wear clothes, we can wear remnants of the deity's clothes, you know, like that. We have a shelter because we're servants of Krishna. You know? Anybody wants to come here and serve Krishna, we'll find accommodation for them. We pray to Krishna, and sure enough, there'll be some place to build a house the whole world can live in. I want to come. Well, what can you do? I can do this. I can do that. Okay, then you know, what are you doing? I'm making money. Okay, you give a certain percentage to the. You become fully engaged in the project program here. Yeah, I'm working, making a little money. Okay, use the money for Krishna, and then okay, use some money for some residence. Okay, but now it's not your residence. It's Krishna supplying it. Yeah. So our tough point is that if you properly engage in spiritual life, as you engage in spiritual life, then everything else follows automatically. Yeah. Yeah. You should ask him, are you a demon? If he says, yes, I'm a demon, you say, kick him, take his wallet. He's not going to need it. You know? No, because the devotee sees, oh, here's somebody, here's a servant of Krishna, engaged in some circumstance, you know. And Prabhupada gives the example. His neighbors were beating their boy, you know, their son, right? You know the story, right? So he asked his servant to ask their servant what was happening. And the older boy had typhoid. And they told the younger boy strictly, do not give him any food, don't this and that, like don't, you know. But the younger boy, the older boy was starving. He said, go sneak some stuff in the kitchen for me. He got it. And the boy almost died, you know, like that. So they're beating on him like that, you know. So he was thinking he was helping somebody, but actually he was causing his death, you know, like that. So you see, this person is just about to go to the spiritual world and be free from all birth, death, disease, and anxiety forever, and you're saving his life and keeping him here, you know, you know, by taking him to the hospital, you know. It's better, you know. Remember, was he there? A little bird out back there, and he brought it, you know. We put it under a tree next to the rock, and it was just dying, you know. Children were crying, others, you know. But it was very natural, you know, outside. One Peruvian poet said, I don't want to tempt fate, but I actually have no fear of dying outside under the trees with the birds singing. It's actually the whole thing that causes all the fear is the hospital, if you go in there. But if you're outside and sun shining, and, you know, and the trees are there, and, you know, some sane people are sitting around you like that, it's very natural, you know. You're already starting to get onto the psychological platform, and then, you know, it's okay, you're adjusted. You know, yeah, if you live a rotten life, and you know, you have some fear of what's going to happen next. You know, okay, so you want to go different body, but it's not unnatural. You know? So that point, we have to see the situation like that. So from that point of view, yeah, if this person should stay in his body, so he can go on and progressing in spiritual life, and you arrange something sort of like that. Yeah, but we see it from the full perspective like that. You know? Sometimes it's good for people to die. You know, we fast consciously. Fasting is good. You know, we always see a break fast. It's not, even though if you're eating all the time, you get sick. You know? People are torturing their children. You can't eat cookies. I want to eat big, bad cookies. No, you can't do that. So, where's the compassion? This child is suffering. You're not giving him cookies. Right? That was Bhakti Siddhanta. But in the beginning, Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, because we don't know the whole science, we have to balance our ordinary dealings in our spiritual life. One very nice formula is spiritual life in the morning, economic development during the day, and sense gratification at night. Come back, have a good meal, watch a DVD, you know, play with your cat, and go back. Yeah, and that's a very nice thing. You just tell people, okay, in the morning, just use your morning time for your spiritual activities. Especially, everything's there, you know. And okay, you get those kind of taken care of. In the daytime, okay, get out, do some work, make some money, and do your social duties. At night, just come back and then just, you know, enjoy your life. You know, like that. So that we can balance it. But as it begins to become more advanced, we see that it's all the same thing. You know? It's all connected, and it's all for Krishna. And that's the best way to use everything. Like that. That's the best way to judge how to help people, how to give money for people like that. You know? And so, yeah, God arranges the whole universe in such a way that some people, they're not on a level where they can understand God. But they can understand, for example, like in the end, the idea is that Duryodhana, in the end, he understood that, yeah, you can do this and that, you can get away with this, you can get away with that, you can get away with this, but you can't get away from insulting, you know, abusing young girls like this. And even he, in the end, in the Peter Brooks movie, you know, I guess it's a novel, accepted that was too much. And trying to poison Bhima and all this kind of stuff he did. And, you know, Krishna accepted, okay, you could look at it that way, it's dharma. But what about trying to, you know, insult, you know, humiliate Draupadi in front of everybody else like that? And he said, well, she insulted me, you know, like that and stuff. But then he's, you know, it's kind of like he's... And then he said, yeah, that was too much. So he was a Rakshasa by choice. You know? And so, you know, he went up. He, deep in his heart, he made some conviction that there are certain things that you just don't do. You're just not correct, you know? So he was going up. He wasn't ready for anything else. So same way, too. We see certain people that they should maintain their human body. And it's good like that, you know? Other people, they should be restrained. They shouldn't be allowed to eat cookies. Other people, you know, somebody is a, you know, what's the word? A murderer, intentional murderer, everything else like that. Then I don't know. Is there capital punishment in Idaho? Is there capital punishment in Idaho? Yeah. So some people think this is good. They don't think it's to purify the person's karma, but they think it's good as a deterrent. You know, some way to eliminate these people. You know, because you can't cure them, so then they should be eliminated so they don't hurt other people. You know, and other ideas as a deterrent. If somebody's thinking about murdering his wife or, you know, or something like this, and he thinks, but, you know, if I may do that, I may be killed, you know, like that. You know, well, if I get caught, I'll spend the rest of my life in prison with no expenses like that. I can live for free in prison like that, you know, So then the state, too, is, you know, saying sometimes people should die, you know. Yeah. Or you send people off to the war in Iraq. You know, and they know these people, many people will die, but they think this is, you know, this is a good thing, they die, right? George Bush has made a lot of heavy decisions about people's lives and happiness, which people don't agree with, you know. And the war, I don't know how many people, and probably speaking, George Bush is the only person, I think, who was pushing the war in Iraq, as far as I know. So how many people has he killed, decided should have died? What's the body, what's the count now? Huh? Every day in your life, you see that?
Yeah.
People attacking. You see that every day? I know.
I said inside of my mouth, you see that word.
Huh?
I said inside of my mouth, you see that word.
No, I walk in the street all the time. I don't see people beating each other around. You know? It's not exact. It doesn't happen that much, you know. Yeah, yeah. So, but, you know. But, so, yeah. You know, I mean, again, it's specific cases are specific cases. You know? Again, you know, you see somebody. You know, for example, my dog got out of the car. My dog was disoriented, and he saw a little dog there. Went over and grabbed him and started shaking. The little dog was howling, you know, stuff. And I went over and, you know, whacked him on the rear and I hung him on it. There was a telephone pole right there. I hung him by his collar, his telephone pole. He's hanging there. And then some kind of guy came by and chastised me for cruelty to animals, you know. You know, I pulled him off and yelled at my dog a little bit, you know, and stuff. You know? And it wasn't hurting him. I make sure of that. It wasn't hurting him. But it was like shocking him and humiliating him, you know. Anyway, and then after that, you know, because next thing he would have done, he probably killed some other dog like that. You know? So I don't know if it was justified or not. He made some decision like that. A more specific case, I remember, very specific. There was one girl called a kid here in Vrindavan, the girl called out playing in the Gorshaw, another one here, and one was digging with a stick in the ground, and it hit this other kid in the face like that, you know? So the other kid just picked it up, the stick, and it started hitting him in the face like that, right in the face, you know. It was all very quick. There wasn't time to think about it. You know? But my intelligence said I had to, you know, separate them. And then I had to, like, just chastise him. Like, it was, I didn't hit him. I just pushed him away and said, you just very forcefully said, go away. Like that, you know? And he wanted to be forgiven because it was just like a kind of like a, you know, immediate reaction type thing, you know. But my intelligence was that I had, this kid had to understand that you don't have to defend yourself, you know, that the higher authorities are there, they're real, and they will defend you. This kid had to understand that you have to be quick enough to stop your mind in situations like that, which he could have, you know. But you have to be, you know, because in the future when it happens and he kills somebody, and he's an adult like that, you know. And so he wanted, and I just rejected him, you know. So finally he went away and cried. Maybe walking back to the Gurukula about half an hour later, he wanted to take my hand, so I took his hand. You know? And it all seemed like, yeah, it was... He learned that deep down at heart that if you're in stressful situations, you've got... No, you can't just let you react and start, you know, try by violence for violence. You know? And so that's a situation where, you know, I protected somebody, but I, you know, chastised somebody else. So sometimes violence is good. You know, sometimes people should get the result, you know, what they're doing like that. You see, they have to, you know, they have to learn this way. You know. So again, every situation is individual like that. Violence is never good, but it's sometimes necessary to defend the weak against the strong when good arguments fail. So generally speaking, you see somebody attacking somebody. I mean, you see a police officer doing something like this. You go over and, you know, tackle the police officer and let the other guy escape. What are you doing? Let this guy... I've seen that. I saw it one time. In Berkeley, with this whole liberal scene, this guy was like, you know, a robber, you know, and a police guy was trying to grab him and just handcuff him and take him off, and these people came up and tried to stop the cop from, like, you know, doing this, you know. Yeah. Then, of course, when they got robbed by this guy, they would have been howling like anything, like, where's the police? How is this going on? I got robbed, you know. Yeah. So sometimes, again, it's a situation of individual. You know, whether violence is good or bad, like that. So why is this deer suffering? Why did this deer lose his mother? Yeah. No. And so maybe he's supposed to take care of it. Yeah. Right? You know, for its tranquility, for it to learn the basic life lessons that reality is teaching us. Okay. You don't give all your life to it. You'll become absorbed in it. Just take care of it. You know? I mean, some kids are fighting. You know, you just stick, you just pull them apart and they say, hey, whose kids are these? You know, and somebody comes out and they say, hey, they're fighting with each other. They say, oh, thank you. And she comes and takes charge. And, yeah, I'm going to become absorbed in them, you know. Huh? Yeah. And it goes, you know, it's all different levels, depending. And that's, again, as you become Krishna conscious, automatically you see this. You know? And until that point, for example, then we're guided by Dharma Shastras. You know, Dharma Shastras tell you how much to help people and how much to do things like that. You know? Yeah. Well, how about everybody? You know, we're supposed to give, what, 50% for Krishna consciousness. Okay. You know? 25% for your family, which I think means your kula. It means like 250. It means like your... I would say here, but to us it means like all the members. We should think like the members of our Krishna conscious community. We should be close enough with everybody else. If somebody has some problem in our community, yeah, people go and help out. You know, if somebody breaks his arm, can't work, then the devotees go and take. You know, okay, don't worry. Just don't. How much is your rent? We talked about it. We're going to pay for it. You know, so you know, that family, and then finally 25% just for your immediate self and, you know, husband, wife, maybe kids. And so, very practical, right here. You know, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's okay? Yeah. Yeah. One devotee, I remember one example, he was walking by the bank of the Ganga in Mayapur. He saw one street dog, he heard a street dog howling, you know, and it's down in the kind of the muddy part of the water. And he looked, and the dog's like, you know, half in the water. Well, why doesn't he come out, you know? It's mud, but he could come out. And so there's a big turtle had his foot in this bed. And the turtle, of course, you know, it was perfect for him. You know? And so he'd step in the mud kind of thing, got the dog, and was going to pull the dog out and make sure the dog didn't bite him, you know. But his turtle was in his proper element. And so the turtle kept pulling, this is my lunch, you know. And so then guy was going deeper because he couldn't get any traction. It was just muddy water. The dog's getting lower and lower and howling and howling. And finally, it's just like there's just no by the water, barely like that, you know. And he really tried his best. He's chanting, praying, everything else like that. Then he began to think, you know, that if this turtle decides to go after me, it's pretty slippery. It's a funny feeling. Really feeling like Krishna is showing me, you know, that everybody has their karma, and sometimes you want to help, you know, and you're not helping, like that. You know? And so people, you know, again, you know, I've experienced that to bring people to the temple, show them Krishna and everything else, and every time you bring them, it's a miserable experience. You know, it just happens when you bring. You see, the Krishna doesn't want this person to. They don't want it. They don't want it. And so Krishna is not letting them, you know, showing them how this yet. They want to go. They have to go to something else first. You know? So understanding people's position and then, you know, depending, you know, what is mercy. Yeah. So, other comments? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, if we put it in the water, it would drown it. If it would drown it, they would bury it in the mud. So no one would know where it was. And after some time, when it was nicely mature, rotten, you'd come and eat it like that. Hmm? Yeah. Turtles eat garbage. Yeah. And so, yeah. Frogs. Frogs eat birds. Yeah. Yeah. If you see the whole thing is everybody's eating everybody else. It's a whole place like that. It's just, in the end, the bacteria eats everybody. Yeah. No, it is. Everything is, you know. Prabhupada says that if the plants could move, they would take over the world. Those are, you know, they all look very nice, but you'd be like, you know, one this completely insane guy, bald guy with no clothes, wanting to, you know, chained to the ground with one foot. That's what a tree is. You know, just Krishna puts them completely under control because they're so, you know, lusty. You don't care about anybody, you know. So you can't even get an animal body because tigers are peaceful. You know, they play, they, you know, each other. Only when they're kind of like hungry. They actually have to depersonalize the animal they're killing. Yeah, you'd be so hungry that they like that, or else you're not that hungry. They're like you see them like shake it first and this and that until finally it's like not really like you can't, you know, it's kind of half distorted. Then they'll kill it. Yeah, like that. They'll also kill real quick without contact. But if there's some personal contact, they won't kill because it's just it's they feel the sympathy, you know, so they can't do it. This is how teachers depersonalize their students before they grade their tests.
How do we avoid the idea that we're the friend of all of them in preaching it? Because sometimes that feeling comes over and I can help it through.
Well, I think Prabhupada is saying here with the same thing is that, yeah, we should be very, one should not give up his, he says one should not give up his interest in obtaining the favor of Vishnu, then we realize if we have this, if we can give Krishna to people, we're authorized to do something like that, then we are the representative of their dearmost friend. Yeah. And so again, this whole point is that there's, you know, Guru and Krishna. Now we become Guru, you know? And this is, you know, it's a subtle point to distinguish the two like that. And many, it's a common contamination. You know? Trevishi told me he was a prophet in Iran. And he said, oh, Krishna's so far away, Prabhupada, I just want to love you. And Prabhupada was irritated. He said, this is Mayavada philosophy. He said, unless you see Guru as representative of Krishna, you know, then there's Mayavada. Another tape he says, actually says, because they are impersonalists, they cannot, because they are impersonalists, they can't realize a personal relationship with Krishna. And therefore he says, all they can see is the enormous feet of their Guru Maharaj. Yeah. And I mean, even in ISKCON, it's a common thing, is that you cannot know Krishna except, there's no manifestation of God except Guru. And then you want it. And then it's usually it's because then okay, I can manipulate him in different ways like that, you know. And then I can don't have to deal with God and stuff. And if he's manipulatable, if I think the guru is manipulatable, then okay, then let's put God out of the picture because I can manipulate him and then get my whatever mystical powers or prestige or whatever I want. You know. But no, he's representative of Krishna, Jehovah, right? Yeah. So, yeah. And you know, you see, Maya is very strong. And this is the point, is it's very subtle. You know, the weeds, Rupa Goswami is giving instructions, and the weeds many times look like the actual creeper of devotional service. And so by always associating with the pure devotee, Uttamadhikari, scriptures, acharyas, and stuff, that's why, you know, again, it's right there in that one verse, Bhakti Ramagatap, Sukhadam Sarvadehinam, okay. But, you know, we have a whole story here, probably speaking, maybe 50, 60 pages with purports, right, to show us how it happens, you know. Otherwise, it happens to us. You know? I mean, we see this happening and this and that and stuff, and some devotees, you know. I mean, I heard when Dharmadas, he was saying, his wife was saying, you know, I'm sacrificing my spiritual life to maintain this family. You know? That's right. Yeah. She didn't have time to chant her rounds because she had to go to work and stuff like that. You know, but that's the idea. You know, you know, try to chant your rounds in the morning at proper time until present comes. Says, come and do this right away. Do this and that. But Prabhu has no time to chant my rounds. You know, you have to sacrifice for Krishna. But this is a contamination right there, and it happens so many times. You know, but it's really not for Krishna. It's for to make more money, to make prestige, things like that. You know? Otherwise, you realize, no, this is, you know, unless you feed the chicken, there's not going to be any golden eggs, right? Unless you chant your japa, there's not going to be any sankirtan. You know, so it has to be proper time for all these things. You know? And these people on these different levels, there's a proper thing for everyone like that, on a different level like that. You know? So pure devotee, you see, you know, problem, you know, always, you know, right? Feeding people, you know, giving shelter and so on. You know? But he said, he gives an example, it's a battle. You know, the doctor sees somebody, I can keep him alive for 30 minutes and he'll die. Okay. Goes to the next guy. 30 minutes work, he'll be stable, he can go back to the hospital. He'll recover in 3 months. Next guy, if I stay with him for 5 minutes, he'll be back in the battle. So he said, probably said, it's unfortunate that the first two people, the next neglects them. You know? And then the other guy can save so many people. She said, the same way, right now we're looking for first-class people to give them first-class habits. You know? And that's the best for everybody. You know? Well, some are going to die. Yeah, but they're going to die anyway. It's just like, but now we're setting up a situation which is going to save so many people. You know? And it may be in the future save them when they come around. So preaching is always, you know, education is always the best welfare activity. Okay. So, we would glad to be here. Our arrival address. Made it, survived. Southwest Airlines. We're coming from, you know, we just landed in the U.S., went to San Francisco and San Jose and Berkeley. And Berkeley is still, you know, I separated from Supa Dhamma Maharaj in 19, after the World Congress, 1997. Because, see, we've been working together for so long, and there's certain kind of things, incompatibilities in certain areas. Yeah, so he kind of said, yeah, you should really try and do your own project and, you know, and all my blessings. You know, you could have very good ideas and stuff, but you have to show them now. Okay, you know, I know. So then I was trying to think out where to establish my base. You know, so on. So I said, okay, San Francisco's a natural place. But Berkeley is just full of politics, you know, the temple there. So then I decided on San Jose, or Santa Cruz. And I was working down there. And I'm back up there again just for these 2 days, and again, it's just, you know, people are trying to suck me into different, you know, are you in favor of him or him? You know, are you in favor, I don't know what your name is. Are you in favor of that guy or this guy? Actually, there were three groups. And I was just trying to be a pure sannyasi, which is the best for everybody. At least somebody in this situation is looking at things objectively, you know. We may have our group, but it's good to hear of somebody who can, like, look at things objectively every now and again. I was trying, like, to stay like that. You know? But that means you don't get a, you know, you don't get a big room with a key to the door. Place in the corner and a little prasad, and you're going to struggle along and okay, you know, make it feel like that. Okay, but that's, you know, good. benefit for society. That was nice too, because I knew where all the BART trains were, and you know, the banks and everything else. I felt like, oh, thank you, you know, my home. So we came here, 1 week here, nice association with all the devotees here, with Sankirtan. So many things happened, you know, traveling around. But before I came from Russia, I was in Russia for the first time, and I made up a PowerPoint show. Did you download it? I put the it's in our, you know, our thing here. Maybe you can look at it later on the screen or, you know, something like that. But nice, you know, Russia. But it's just so different. It's, you know, so very different than anything I've experienced before in many ways. And we were especially doing the Bhakti Bhai Baba program. It's, you know, 2 weeks traveling outside of Russia, outside of Moscow, in the Golden Circle. And then in the country, it's very different. And then back into Moscow. And basically, we were there Monday to Friday in the Brahmachari Ashram, which is about 45 minutes north of the center of Moscow, where the big temple is. And it's about like, I'd say maybe four times the size of your property here. There's the kind of main road, you know, it's out in the country by then. And there's a kind of development of like here. Because, you know, now they got all this money is coming from petroleum. They neglected everything, they're selling all this petroleum, and all this money is coming in now. And so people are building houses. It's just, you can see this, like, you know, like that. They're doing it in a Russian type of way. They're building big log houses. Very nice architecture. And so we have another kind of little side road. You get, you go through a kind of a gravel yard, and then there's a side road, and there's like maybe five houses, one small factory. And they have a lot there. And they have a fence. It's about a 10-foot-tall fence around the place to kind of keep it a little bit private. We're not allowed to go out on the road in a devotional dress because it disturbs the neighbors. They're very simple, like dogs. You know? So if you have a kind of good relation, they're very friendly, very open, but it's something different. It's like, you know, so they realize that. So they go in and out, they dress like ordinary people. And neighbors are the friendly, you know. But it's like being in a prison, though, because it's like, you know, for 5 days of the week, on my exercise, I walk around the prison yard like that. And then, okay, I get up at 2 o'clock. I can't chant my rounds loud, because other people are sleeping, so I can chant silently. You know, this is the whole thing. Then by about 3:30, you know, take a bath and stuff. And by then, there's already light. There's enough light to read by 3:30 in the morning. And so then by Mangala Arati, and this is 40 Brahmachari, enthusiastic program. And after that, I had to use the internet then, because it's the only time to get access, you know, that my rounds were done. Finish that. Russian breakfast, Brahmachari breakfast. They use a lot of buckwheat. It's real natural there, buckwheat and millet. And then after that, we had a 2-hour class, 1 hour, 10-minute break, another hour. And these are like, you know, these survivors of the KGB Sankirtan guys with, you know, scars across their faces and, you know, twisted spines from being beaten and stuff, and sannyas candidates and Sanskritists. Even you would be intimidated. One of them was a Russian devotee, started learning Sanskrit and spent 7 years studying the Sanskrit in Udupi. Yeah, so it's like, you know, he's the top guy. Other ones are just one guy, Krishna guys. He did, he published a whole songbook with all the grammar and everything else like that, the songbook. So I'm going to give classes to them and say, you must surrender to Krishna. Oh, yes, I know. And then after that, you know, a little lunch break, and I was doing a 3 hours preparation, first canto. And we kind of slowed down to one half to one chapter a day. It was like that. So for me, it was incredible, you know, this very regulated program every day and this confined. I discovered many things I didn't know at the first canto, even more things. Some of the chronology I'll tell you. First three chapters are Sutta of the Sages. And they asked, well, why did Vyasadeva write this big book? And you say it's such a great book, why did he write it? Okay, then he met Narada Muni and had this impetus like that. You know? Chapters 4, 5, 6. Then he's going to write it, and after that, the whole rest of the thing is the background for the beginning of the book, which is Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj. Who is Sukadeva Goswami? Who is Maharaj? So then after that, there's events right after the battle, you know, which is Dronacharya tries to kill the Pandavas. You know, Dronacharya punished. And he says, Ashwatthama punished. Then Krishna's going to leave. Kunti offers prayers. He's still going to leave. He just your ass. He stays. Then next is the disappearance of Bhishma Dev. So when was that? How much time was that after the battle? When Bhishma Dev disappeared. It was Uttarayani, no? I guess when the sun is starting to go to the north. Yeah. So that means it was probably in January, I think. Because it's already, you know, battle was in December. And then the sun starts to go to the north. So, okay. But then after that, Bhishma Dev disappears to Bhishma Dev. Krishna leaves for Dwarka. Krishna arrives in Dwarka. Then the birth of Maharaj Pariksit. But it appears that Krishna was there. So that's a flashback. That's why it's not, you know, it's cutting back to what happened before Krishna left for Dwarka. So Krishna stayed all the time until Uttara had her child, and the ceremony was there. And he inspired Maharaj Pariksit to perform 3 Ashtamedha sacrifices, which is sometimes confused as a Rajasuya sacrifice. And Krishna Kshetra was talking about that in one of his papers. And it says Rajasuya, but it wasn't, it was Ashtamedha sacrifice. And I guess that was after Maharaj, I don't know when it was before or after Maharaj Pariksit was born. I think it was afterwards, after. And then he went back to Dwarka. And then, you know, nothing. And then all the rest of the chapters are much later. Vidura comes and saves Dhritarashtra. Krishna disappears. The Pandavas disappear. And then Maharaj Pariksit is mature. And so on like that. So the chronology now clear. And also finding this, you know, what I was going through this marking, so section by section. There are sections where you see where Prabhupada summarizes everything. Like Narada Muni's life is one of the best descriptions of all the stages like that. In the first canto, is this, his life is kind of like, you know, like that. What was his mother? Was he born in a very erudite family? What kind of maidservant? Well, probably says a simple woman. You know, the Sanskrit is mork, you know, which means, you know, foolish. You know, foolish. She was a, you know, just a foolish servant like that. You know. Maybe battering, but she was just kind of a foolish lady, and her son was Narada Muni like that. But then it really brings it out, because probably later on it says he doesn't have a high birth or anything else. He was coming from just an ordinary, simple, you know, simple family like that, or not even a family, just like situation like that. But he became, you know, Narada Muni. How did he become Narada Muni? What happened? Huh? He got the association of the Bhaktivedantas. He would sit and listen when they were talking about Krishna. Morning and evening, he would take prasad. And then when they were leaving, they gave him diksha. They initiated him, told him to go ahead. And then he went through all the stages like that. Yeah. Our next movie in Peru will probably be the story of Narada, done by children, for children, with Oscar. We're going to have some workshops. Very nice. Yeah. I was thinking when Narada's going through the forest, he sees all these animals. That's perfect for little dance, for little children coming out, like coming out as, you know, a few little birds, you know, or little tigers, like that. You know, perfect for this. So it's a very good dance teacher down in Hare Krishna Dasi. She's good. I haven't seen better dance group in India than she does. They train in India. Yeah. So, and somebody told me when they, Ramanand Sagar, I think it was him, they came to Prabhupada and asked him about doing a Bhagavatam, I think it was him. And Prabhupada said, first, just do the first canto. I said, I want to do the whole thing, Prabhupada. Yeah, that is good, but the first canto is, you know, yeah. So that, you know, you want to do the whole thing. But Prabhupada was telling them to make movies of the first canto, which is what we're doing like that. Yeah. And so, you know, because you're one of the board members of the, the Ministry of Higher Education? Mm-hmm. Ministry of Educational Development, yeah. I don't know, talk to you. No, it's some idea talking about it. Because, you know, we went through the Bhaktivedanta College, and then now in Russia, because people told me all the Russians are the most advanced in educational things. You know? And they went there, and they're trying to figure out what to do. I was giving them as much, you know, perspective on what to do as they were, and they were divided, and they didn't know what they were. Just, you know, one plan was to do this, the other guy didn't know that was the plan, and finally they just kind of panicking and getting it done because he had to get back to work and stuff. But I did introduce this idea that Bhakti Vaibhava means, and now we go through Bhagavad Gita again, and then we go through Yasopanishad again, we go through all these books again. But now we do it at this this higher level. And then even, and they all discussing it, that's good. Because now, not that we do Bhagavad Gita, we finish Bhagavad Gita in Bhakti Shastra. And it's over, it's too much, too intense sometimes. So now they're going to, do other books like that. And the pacing, the content, the examination, what kind of testing they have for it. So they're going ahead. Then the ministry by higher education then has to decide the standard, right, for Bhakti Vaibhava degrees. And then they have to decide the standard for Bhaktivedanta degrees. And it's going to be, Bhaktivedanta Ananta Rup Das. Who gave him this title? Does he think he's Prabhupada? I think one solution at that point is that point of Prabhupada becomes Thakur. Right? A.C. Bhaktivedanta Thakur. But anyway, it's nice, it's a whole area for Sankirtan. It's the only Sankirtan platform that Prabhupada mentions in the beginning of Bhagavatam. This book should be taught in the schools and universities. It doesn't say this book should be distributed in the street, or like that, I think maybe mentions a little bit of administrators like that, the leaders of society, the politicians. But it definitely says clearly, this is not like just frosting on the cake. This is the actual, one of the most important Sankirtan areas, is developing our own educational program and then introducing this as ideas into the universities and in various degrees like that they can accept. Okay. So thank everybody. And today we can go all the Bhagavad. And tonight, the program tonight? Here. Okay. Maybe we can show our... Can we get some bigger screen or something like that? But even the laptop's good enough for smaller people. Oh, okay. We can see our Russian movies. You haven't seen the Light of the Bhagavad movie, right? We finally got our soundtrack, our legal soundtrack. Have you seen the book? Pages were falling out. We finally solved that problem too. Now the problem is to get them shipped. This is the last book I'll ever print in my life. That somebody else wrote. Such work. But it's just now it's there. But now I get the first shipment was $2 a book. They ship it. The book's $8, and the shipping was $3. We're working on that. So Prabhupada ki. Parker's Ma Mantra ki. Mahaprasadam ki.